The Reserve Pool, episode number 30, Guiding New Players. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of The Reserve Pool. This is Dave here.
And I'm Evan.
Yes, you are. I haven't said that for a while. That just kind of fell out of my mouth.
I feel like I needed to say something instead of an I'm Evan, because it's too Pokemon-ish. Evan!
Wow.
What?
No, that's okay. Pokemon-ish. I like it. Okay, so speaking of Pokemon-ish...
Pokemon-esque? I don't know.
Well, so I say really stupid things to my wife a lot, but not in the normal kind of guy stupid way, but like instead of just, you know, sweet dreams, if I'm going to be up a little longer within her, I'll say something stupid and cutesy like, oh, sweetie dreamies. And then one time I decided that would be a great name for a Jigglypuff. And I said so. And she thought that was the most hilarious thing because, I don't know, she thought I came up with that really fast. She was like, wait, what did you say? And it's a Jiggly. I think it would be a great name for a Jigglypuff. That's what happens when you see a Jigglypuff. You're going to sleep. So this is not about Pokemon. This is about us and gaming. Well, I guess Pokemon is gaming.
Until Pokemon Dice Masters comes out.
Hey, that'd be awesome, and I would love to see it, even though I know there's no way WizKids will get the license. That would be... I would play the heck out of that. I know there are people who are like, really? Even though you had those thoughts on Yu-Gi-Oh? Yes, I know. I know that may make me a hypocrite, but Pokemon hit me at a different time in my life than Yu-Gi-Oh did. I was in, like, what, somewhere between 6th through 8th grade when Pokemon was big, and Yu-Gi-Oh was a few years after that, so whatever.
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh was at that point where I was kind of getting out of card gaming, so it was like, ship sailed, man.
Well, it was, if I was card game, I was playing Magic the Gathering.
Right.
I just, you know, it was a different thing for me, and that's just, I was too old, whatever. Yeah. There, of course, I know that said, there are a lot of people in mine and your age, Racket Evan, that love that, and that's no problem. They're
yes.
Certainly allowed. So, yes, all right, so enough with the let's make sure we don't offend anybody talk.
or maybe we want to offend people.
Maybe
you know who
do.
You are.
You all, yes, haha. I'm pointing at you in the general direction where you may live. Right, so Dice Masters and all that stuff. But before we get to some of those topics, I do want to clarify a couple things about some of the new segments. We have gotten a few submissions here and there for both of the video-based one and the podcast-based one that we were talking about, right? So the podcast one was your tales of victory and defeat. The time when you snatched, you know, defeat from the jaws of victory, or the time when you won against all odds. The thing is, though, that a lot of the entries, I think there might have been some miscommunication. That's probably my fault, and I apologize. What we're looking for are those specific kind of narrative instances of when something like that happened. We've had a few entries that are like, here's my team, and I went to this OP event, and I went, you know, I went undefeated, and it was crazy, and everybody was really impressed. And that's really cool, and we're looking at those teams, actually, and we're going to probably talk about some of those on the blog, because it's interesting, and that's good, and we'll probably reply to your emails, too. But we're looking for something more narrative that we can kind of tell from almost a first-person format. Again, we're sort of shamelessly ripping off / inspired by the Tales of Board Gaming Horror that Dice Tower does. I think it'd be an interesting way to help the show and the Reserve Pool in general reflect the players a little more. So we're looking for something like that. You know, when did your awesome team that you painstakingly put together get absolutely torn to shreds by your, you know, 5-year-old child? When did you trip at the game store and your dice went all over the place? When did you think there's no way I can win, and then you all of a sudden you saw that strategy and there it was, and you grabbed it and you got it and you won? Stuff like that. So that's what we want. mailbag@thereservepool.com. Also, for the combos segment on YouTube, we've had a couple of entries, but it's not something that I want to do until, like, I don't feel comfortable featuring it as a regular thing until we have multiple entries. I want a backlog there so that we can pick from things, because, you know, you're all going to submit good ideas, but not all of them are going to be workable necessarily. But if you want to see us kind of bash our brains in figuring out, like, okay, do this but you can only use commons, or somebody wanted an all-female team and we are working on that one, but I again I don't feel comfortable putting through this until we have a lot of stuff, so we have a lot to pick from. We can make sure that it's what people want to see. Because if we don't get a ton of response, then maybe it's not something that you guys are interested in, and that's cool. But a lot of people have asked about deck building, so I think that'd be worth it.
Yes. I feel like I haven't said anything for like 2 minutes, so
you didn't. I'm sorry. That was the exposition part of the play. Sometimes you have to hit people over the head with it. So
yeah. No, I'm cool. I just get antsy if I don't say something.
Well, Evan, you were talking about getting back into some role playing, correct?
Yes, I was. And I'm actually
I thought you were going to end the sentence right there. Yes, I was.
Yes, I was.
And
No, we're being the quiet type today, except not really. I mean, Pokemon can only say their name, Evan.
We can say it with different inflections.
Evan.
Evan!
Oh my. Don't get me started. But yeah, no, I'm actually looking to start into the D&D 5th edition expeditions, just because I'd like to get some play of 5th edition before I start looking into DMing it, because I like to DM and I've been doing so somewhat intermittently, depending on availability of people to play, for quite a while now, probably 10-15 years at this point. So
nice.
I'm looking to get back into that. So there's a group that, once the holidays are over, I should hopefully be able to play with. So looking forward to that.
That's cool. I would love to get back to that, but there's nobody doing expeditions or encounters or whatever they're calling them that's that close to me. But at some point, it'd be cool. I like 5th edition. If you haven't experienced it yet, I think you will too. You've said before you kind of like 2nd and 3rd and 3.5.
Was your heyday. I like some of the stuff that came out with them. I don't know if I don't know if I've called them superior systems to 5 or 4 or possibly even 4 sometimes, but
yeah.
I don't want to start off like a giant flame war in our comments about 4th edition versus 5th edition. They both have their points. They are different things by the same company. So it's like Chiquita bananas versus Chiquita grapefruits. I actually don't know what Chiquita makes outside of. I know they make fruit, but I can't think of anything specific outside of bananas.
I can't either, to be quite honest with you. Well, yeah, and I don't want to start that kind of thing either. And frankly, right. I don't have a lot of experience with 4. But I thought that 5 was pretty intuitive while still kind of giving you enough to kind of think about and customize with your character. So,
right.
Yeah, I think you'll like it.
I like that they have backgrounds, like they give you a little more direction in making your character's background, which is one of the things I always was like, man, I kind of want more ability to craft your character within the system. And then I'd always have to go to GURPS, but then I'd have to suffer through GURPS' like combat system, which I never enjoyed. So.
Right. Well, the thing I like about it is that the artwork is less whimsical. You don't have, like, I'm a 6-foot guy with a 7-foot sword, or, like, I'm a lady and I'm wearing a chainmail bikini that will somehow protect me. It's much more, I don't want to say realistic because it's fantasy, but that's the best word I have there. There's much less suspension of disbelief required.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, gaming-wise, I have a little bit of a beef with Mayfair games right now. I picked up Seafarers of Catan because I didn't have it, and everybody says that's the expansion to get. I usually hear Seafarers or Cities and Knights, but I seem more positive about Seafarers. So, that's what I got. There's no problem with the game, though. That, you know, it's a great game. The box and insert are the exact same as the base Settlers of Catan box and insert. So things don't fit. There are more tiles than you can actually fit in the tile compartments. There are certain pieces that are cut out awkwardly in order to accommodate all the C spaces, and there's actually nowhere for them to go in the box. And yet there are other compartments that are like, this is where you would house your development cards and other things like that that you can't, that are still in there, but there's no development cards that are in this. So I'm not 100% sure how I'm supposed to, like, store this or put this together, because the expansion itself doesn't fit in the expansion box.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's... I don't like it when games have boxes, with or without inserts, that aren't really appropriate to the content. Like, I've always kind of shaken my fists at Fantasy Flight Games, LCGs, or at least the ones I've experienced with, which is Netrunner and Warhammer 40,000 Conquest, because they sort of have the box has, like, mostly insert, and then there's a strip in the middle where all the, like, where you know you put your cards or where the cards are, and yeah. I'm like, it's so much wasted space. But when I take the inserts out, like everything just rattles around. So it's like, well, I can't really organize things that well because if I move the box, it's 52 pickup.
But, well, and yeah, and even then, like in those boxes that you're talking about, there's no good way. Like, I think you're supposed to be able to store the cards in there, but they just have these little tabs that flip up, and that's it. There's no good way to do that. Doomtown Reloaded does a nice job with it, and that's a pretty unique game, and I think you would enjoy it, but I know you have other stuff coming.
Oh, yes. Imperial Assault.
Yeah, you're going to have to let me know how that is.
So. Yeah, I'm actually trying to, you know, take up weightlifting with that box, because the box incoming has a couple other things in it, but it's like 10 pounds, and I have to assume that the other things, because it's actually a second Warhammer 40,000 Conquest set, because I want to try deck building, and the first expansion to the game. And I'm figuring that between the two of them, like, there may be a pound and a half. So that's like 8 pounds of Imperial Assault. So I'm thinking I'm just going to use it for weightlifting when I'm not playing it.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Why not? All right. Well, we should... We
talked
earlier about...
Imperial Assault curls.
We talked earlier about some of the things that you can send to Mailbag, and you can also send us your questions to Mailbag, and we're going to take care of some of those today. So let's do that now.
Yes, we have three questions today. I'm not going to do a Monty Python bit about this time. So our first question is from Josh, who writes in to ask about Ant-Man's global and damage done earlier in the turn to the guys who use the global on. Like, for example, if you have a 3-5 character who takes 3 damage, maybe you pick them because someone used Mr. Sinister and you had to pick someone to take 3 damage. And later during the attack step, the other player, or one of the players, who knows, uses Ant-Man's global to switch the attack and defense of a character. Is it, what happens? Is it, does their attack value go to 2 because their defense was dropped to 2 by the 3 damage and then it switches over to the attack? Or do they just get knocked out because they took 3 damage and their defense value was 3 at that point? And honestly, I mean, this is sort of the question of, are you putting counters on the character, or is this like Hearthstone when things happen to, you know, when your character takes damage, their defense is permanently lowered? And I think we actually can take from our Mr. Fantastic questions way back when, where, you know, well, when he gets that extra defense, if he takes damage equal to his original defense, will he get knocked out at the end of the turn? And eventually WizKids said yes. I think it's the same situation where, you know, you that 3 damage stacks until it would clear at the end of the turn. So it's 3 damage, and then when the attack gets swapped, well, that 3 damage is equal to how much health he has, and since we're not in the combat step, assumedly, it might get a little muddy if we're actually in that, like, period after where damage swaps in, but I don't actually know if you can use the global then, so
right.
Maybe
no,
it's not a problem.
I don't think you can. There's no window for it there.
Yeah, but yeah. Regardless, you've taken damage equal to your defense, you get knocked out. And
I was actually... I was going to wrestle with this a little more, but your confidence has kind of inspired me. I now that I'm looking at it, I think that has to be it. I think that the Mr. Fantastic example probably tells it, that it's about the fact that Mr. Fantastic does get KO'd in that case means that so would do our hypothetical 3-5 character here. So, yeah, not a whole lot else to say there. Good call, Evan. I don't know. I was probably about to go down the wrong path with it, but I think you're right.
Let's call them Reverse Wanda.
There you go. So, all right. Well, then Devin writes in next, has a question about alternate art cards. He came across a full art variant card for Black Widow Serena that was from the WizKids Open on eBay, and it was like $150. So he wants to know, what is your take on the rarity of these full arts? Do you think they will see their way into packs or setup boxes? Setup boxes, yes, because we've seen it. Packs, probably not. He says, it's hard for me to get into the mindset of collecting all the cards if I know that there are these full art variants that cost an arm and a leg out there. For example, with this posting, $150, he'd rather have 2 gravity feeds and a setup box. Don't you think the collectible aspect of the game will benefit if there are more variants for card art widely available? I understand cost of printing, but to me, that small change would bring in more players slash collectors. To the last point, I don't know. It might. There are some people who really like that, but I'm happy with the price point right where it is, and it kind of steals a little from an editorial that I'm going to do later for the video channel, which if you haven't subscribed, you should. We're on YouTube. Where I think this game kind of solves a lot of those CCG problems. If you buy a Gravity Feed, you're going to get almost all of what you want. There's very little that you're not going to have. You should get a full common and uncommon playset, more than enough dice to play everything with, and a super rare or two to boot. And in this one, the super rares aren't even like that necessary. So that's pretty cool too. I think there are people who go after that, but I'm not a huge fan of that personally. And if they raise the cost in order to finance it, I don't think it's something that I would be interested in personally.
Yeah, and I think that there's definitely people who would, you know, if like with Magic, where every card, I want to say, I don't actually know, has like a hollow foil or shiny, whatever you want to call it, version.
Yeah.
I don't know what the official name for it is. But has a, you know, hollow foily version of it that is more collectible or whatever. But you know, some people think that's really cool, and you know, more power to them. And I could see alt art working the same way. But I think for the time being, it's more going to be a reward for buying one of the set of boxes. You'll get, you know, that common storm, the alt art storm or Professor X or whatever. And they're going to keep it as prizes, to, you know, something a little rarer to say, hey, you really, you know, you really punched the something.
I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. Of punching the something.
Yes. The glory of punching the something.
Yes. Yeah, that about sums it up. I think there are people who would go for that, but I don't know. I guess maybe to an extent they've done that already, because I know there are people who would not buy the setup box at all if it weren't for the special different dice that are in there, the basic actions or something like that is different or special. I can't remember which. And the alternate art card. So I guess they have that a little bit. I don't know, to get it actually out there in the wild with all, you know, within all the sets, within the booster packs. I don't know. The only thing that I could see that they can maybe do is have different artwork for the non-starter uncommons, or like for the uncommons of the starter set characters. That could be cool, and that maybe wouldn't be too logistically difficult, but then I don't know what their manufacturing process is like.
Actually, I would kind of think it would be cool if you had a chance to get the commons from the starter set as alt art in packs.
That could be cool too, and then you don't have to worry so much about.
Yeah, have them be sort of rare, but be a way of making, you know, have it be a little extra way of getting those dice. Because if you're going to have a problem getting any characters' dice, it's going to be the starter characters.
Yeah, and, you know, that's great.
A little collectible thing. So
I like that idea. Good on you.
Popped right into my head.
Yeah. What's next
for our third question? Our third mailbag item. Carl wants to know if you could convert this game to work like Couriers, assigning glory amounts to each character and so forth, or another variant of the game, where you start with your entire team in your bag. I actually can't say much about this because I've never played Couriers.
I have played Couriers on the app, not in real life. I will say this. I can see the appeal of Couriers, and I know a lot of people like Couriers. I'm not a huge fan of Couriers. I'll play it on the app because it's a nice little time filler, but I think the time that it takes to actually get Quarrier set up, I could probably get a game or two of Marvel Dice Masters in and be a lot happier at the end. The problem I have with Quarriers is that it's very passive. The attacking is forced. There's not like a whole lot that you really get to do that's unique there. It's a cool concept, and it's the engine that fuels this. But for me, this has fired Quarriers. Now, could you convert it? Yes, because they're based on the same thing. However, the difficulty is going to be, one, there are so many things in this game that are dealing with different kinds of attacking and defense than Quarriers does. So you would have some characters with abilities that are completely useless. And the second thing is that it would be kind of difficult to figure out like what set of cards to actually have out there to purchase in the middle. Because right, for Quarriers, you have everybody has a common pool of these characters that they can purchase from instead of their personal stash like we have here. So I think you could do it. I wouldn't know where to begin with it because I think there's a lot of liberties that you'd have to take with the abilities. But if you work it out, please tell us, and we'll get the word out there because there may be some who are inclined to try this.
Honestly, I can't help but think that would be just like, okay, so I start with my super combo team and then just annihilate my opponent.
Oh gosh, yeah. Can you imagine like your first draw is everything that you need? And your opponent gets a handful of sidekicks.
My first draw is heroic Wolverine and heroic Captain America. Thanks. Have a nice day.
Yeah. Part of the energy management of this game is having to purchase those things. Otherwise, I think costs would be incredibly different. Fielding costs would be completely differently handled and the like.
And honestly, if you're going to go like a super combo route like that, having them cost more isn't actually necessarily a detractor because you're cutting down that dice pool. So it's, you know, quote unquote,
well, that's
easier to get your guys. So obviously, yeah, with the starting sidekicks, you know, you're only going to get it so undilute.
Right. That it's a nifty idea. And in the email, he compared it to like regular old CCGs, but I think the issue there is that within CCGs, even ones that have the most basic version of energy and mana and whatever you're using, you still had to, have a new turn to be able to play that energy down. You only had so much that you could use at a time. So maybe if you did something like that, or like Hearthstoned it, where you start with one energy and then turn two you have two, and then turn three you have three, but then again, you have all these energy phases on your dice. So I'm not 100% sure how that would work. I think it's a nifty idea, but I don't know. I think where this game wins for me against other CCGs, kind of like how it wins against Quarriors, is in that it is such a different engine that you're using. It's not, okay, here we go, and draw, and what do we have? It's you're building your deck while you're playing the game. You're not just building it in the squad that you bring to the table.
Right, and there is a lot of strategy in when you buy things and how you buy things and what things you bring because of how much they are. Like, if that wasn't an issue, the two cost characters who do nothing would probably never see play.
Yeah. So, that's pretty much that. I think it's a nifty idea, and I totally see why you're asking. I don't know how it would be workable with the way. I think you would need completely different dice than what we have.
Yeah, or at the very least, you'd need a very specific rule set.
Thank you all, Carl and Devin and Josh,
yes,
for writing in. We appreciate it. You can do it too. mailbag@thereservepool.com. Questions, comments, concerns, complaints, mutiny, all those sorts of things.
Pokemon.
Pokemon. As well as things for victory and defeat. And the other one, the combo deck building thing on YouTube. So that's that. And we're going to move to our feature topic now. So our feature topic today is something that a lot of people have asked about, and we are going to have some more resources up on the site, and others already have them out there. Guiding new players, whether you are brand new to this game itself or whether you have the position of, you know, you're at a game store and you're trying to build a scene, or you have friends who would like to learn how to play and you're the game guru for this one, how are you going to guide new players to the game? It's a position that apparently a lot of people are finding themselves in, given the volume of questions and comments we're getting about it. So let's start with this. If you're completely brand new, Evan, and you don't have anything yet, what should you buy and why should you buy it?
More and more, I lean a little bit towards the setup box as opposed to a starter set. Partially because of the storage options it gives you, and really, that's the main thing. And it gives you a few packs, so you can actually get a little bit of more of the taste for the game, in addition to the starter, which is everything you quote unquote need to, you know, play. It gives you a little bit more flavor, a little bit more of the excitement of opening stuff, and it's, you know, in a pretty reasonable package. So I think that's like, if someone was completely new and wanted to, you know, start up their own scene, I'd probably advise that. Assuming they weren't like, you know, all in already. If they were all in, I'd say get yourself a starter, get yourself a starter and a gravity feed or a kit. But no, for the basic person, I'd say find someone else who has the game and play with their set for a while.
Well, that's always good with these anyway. And people, if there are people out there who are going to be, like, who have friends that are into this game, they're likely to have a lot of dice. They're going to have more than enough that you can play with. And even if they don't have duplicates of a specific card that you'd like to play with, proxying is pretty darned easy in this game.
Or honestly, you could go to Cardmaster DB and print out the picture and
Dice Master
put that
DB.
Down.
Yep.
Card
Whatever
Master
it's called.
DB. I don't even know anymore.
yeah, you could do that. So probably your best bet, as I think with almost any board game, is to really do some research first, play with a friend's cards and dice and stuff like that. But I'm going to have to disagree with you, Evan. I think the starter set is a good place to start. I don't mind the setup box, but I don't think you're going to get enough dice to really actually play a game with from that. I don't think there are enough booster packs in there to give you that experience. So while it does give you the chance to do that, I would only do that if you were going to buy also other booster packs with it. If you're going to do that, then I think okay. But there are also some characters that you're just not going to see. I think it also depends on, do I want to play draft? Or do I plan on playing a lot of constructed? You know,
right.
If you're going to have the opportunity to play draft, setup box is probably better. If you're going to have the opportunity or you feel like you want to be able to play a lot on your own with friends, with significant other, a spouse, or whatever else, then I would say go with getting as much as you possibly can, which would be something like the starter set. And then if you really like it, a gravity feed too. So that's my thought on that. I know that's pretty different from yours, but that's where I am.
Maybe I'm misremembering. Doesn't the starter set come with, like, basically the, or I'm sorry, the setup box come with the starter set?
It doesn't come with the characters.
Oh, well, I'm completely silly and completely didn't remember that. I totally wouldn't recommend that in that case.
Okay. Well, very good.
So I thought it came with the start. I thought it was basically the setup, the starter kit with a few more things.
No, it's the basic actions and psychic dice. It's everything like but the characters. It just has the booster packs instead. Otherwise, yeah, I would say totally
That's
go for
maddening.
That.
Maddening. That's like the opposite of what I'd want.
Yeah. So if you already ordered it, please cancel your order and you can send hate mail to evan@thereservepool.com.
Yes, please. That's just completely boneheaded of me. No, ignore me. Totally get the starter kit if you're brand new.
Okay, so we actually have consensus. Huzzah!
Yes.
The next question then is how to teach. If you are somebody who is introducing others, or if you're the one who has devoured the rule book, I feel like you should take a page from what WizKids does with HeroClix. And rather than do what it says to do in the book, which is have that basic game with two characters on a side, which we have talked a lot about before, but if you're new to the show, we don't like it. The reason why we don't like it is that there's not enough to purchase. It ends up just being trading some body blows and attacking and defending and stuff. It does enough to get you to see how, like, the turns work,
no strategy or anything to it, really.
No, you can purchase, like, everything really, really quick, and then usually it's one person's going to end up with a clear advantage and just smack the other person down. It's not a real positive experience. What you should use that for is to just play out a couple of turns so that everybody understands what they're doing. In that case, I think it's acceptable. Right. What I think you should do is play just the costs in attacking and defending. No abilities. Get used to, like, the structure of a turn and everything else, and then worry about how the abilities are going to break the game later. Do that. And you can do that with any size game, but if you just have a starter set, I say to use four cards on a side, and then just divvy up the dice, and then use the same three basic actions that they recommend for the very basic game in the rulebook.
Yeah, honestly, that sounds good. I think the only thing I would do is, if you do have that pool of, a fuller pool of characters to pick from, and you know there's a character in the set that the person you're trying to teach the game to really likes, make sure they got that character.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going to do it that way too, where you're ignoring abilities, then it's no big deal. The only other thing I would say is break it down so it's fairly easy. That each player has like a 2, a 3, a 4, and a 5 cost, or
right.
like a purchase cost, or like a 3, 4, 5, 6, something like that.
Right.
And I think you're all set then. I think if you have that, you get to actually play the game. You get to do a little bit of battling and stuff. And HeroClix does the same thing, where you basically just play with the movement and attack and defense before you figure out, okay, now how does my character, what abilities does my character get to use to break the rules?
Right.
That's And I think I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't do it that way, because it seems kind of obvious given that they already do that with another property.
Yeah. The only thing I might like caution with the approach is maybe avoid some of the dice that tend to be, you know, like Spider-Man or Green Goblin, who tend to have sort of cheap costs to play, like to buy, and tend to be sort of disproportionately strong to how much they cost the field. Those are like sort of the power characters in that. So, you know, maybe try to get one of them per side, but don't, you know, try to keep that sort of thing balanced. And that's, I mean, that's something you'll get from looking at the dice, but I guess try to keep things a little balanced so it doesn't become really one-sided, because that's a problem that was actually in the basic set, where it's, you know, one side gets these two awesome dice and the other side gets Thor and,
well, the big problem
bad
there,
Human Torch.
The big problem in there was that they were playing with the abilities.
Right.
So, you know, I think if you take the abilities out of the equation, you know, in this game, an 8-8 character is going to be as effectively blocked by a 1-1 as they are, you know, something else. You could even take the basic actions out of the running here if you wanted, but I think it's okay to keep those in because those are always going to work the way that they work.
And they're going to add a little spice to the game, so it's exactly. Not just defense and, you know, attack and block.
Exactly. And frankly, that might be a fun variant to play in general, just to kind of, if you want to play a game where you have like crazy basic actions and play with just the abilities and stats, or excuse me, with no abilities, just the costs and stats on your, you know, even an established player, that could be kind of fun because then the basic actions become, you know, more powerful and more interesting. So that could
throw
be fun too.
Car becomes yeah. The best basic action ever.
It could, yeah, absolutely. So I think those are the couple of big things. So if you're learning, do it that way. That's my recommendation. But then I also recommend you look at some of the other resources out there, the big one being Rodney Smith's Learn to Play video. If you don't know who he is, he has a YouTube channel called Watch It Played, and he's actually helped me make the final decisions on a few different games, like the D&D adventure system Wrath of Ashardalon. I bought because I saw it played on there, and I was like, yep, that kind of sealed the deal, and a few others. Rodney Smith's video essentially taught me how to play this game. It's really good.
Now, and I will definitely say, when I was first talking about this game to Katie, she started and was like, "What is this?" You know, I gave her a basic description, and she went and found that video on her own, and then she was just like, "And now I know everything." It was actually really she watched that and got really into it. So that's kind of her starting point. So,
right,
and I'm sure if she was here, she would probably relate a similar story. So.
No, that's pretty much what it was for me, too. Between that and then the Dice Tower would show a couple of games, and at that point, I had not quite a clue what was going on. But now people have asked us to do something along those lines, and while I don't think that Rodney Smith is a quintessential board game explainer. He's so good at it. WizKids sought him out to do that. You'll notice at the beginning of that video is the WizKids logo. He didn't just do that for his channel. WizKids actually asked him to do it. He also does those kinds of instructional things for Plat Hat Games. Now, others he just does on his own because it's what he likes to do. But he is so good at this. So I don't think that I'm not going to try to pretend to be him or anything like that, but people have asked us for the same, and there have been enough rules updates and changes and everything to this point that, now we know what a lot of the questions are that new players have, and that was not something that we knew back when he did that video. We're going to give that a shot too. We actually have currently worked up an outline. We've hit 3-ish pages right now, and we're not anywhere near done. And, so yeah, that is something that you're going to see. Again, a lot of people have been asking for it, and I think it'll be fun to put together.
Indeed. Unfortunately, yeah. I don't know if you'll get to see my horrible, my hideous mug in this video, but maybe there'll be some ghost commentary from me. Spooky.
A spooky ghost?
Are there any other kind?
Casper. Did you hear that? I hope you can hear that sigh, everybody.
That was a very special kind. That was a angry face sigh.
There's another neat article there. When you're ready to take the next step after the basic game, there's another site out there. We referred to before some of the different places out there other than us to get some Dice Masters news, like Dice Anonymous or Dice Masters Rules. you know, some of the resource sites like Clear and Draw or Dice Masters DB. There's a newer one. In fact, some of these guys who are working on this site have written into us before, Sidekicks and Shields. And they had an article recently about rookie mistakes, like common things that rookies try to do. Give that a look, because there's some good points in there. Some of them are good common sense if you're a veteran of CCGs, but others, but even those might not be so obvious to somebody who is new to this type of game. So that's worth a look too. But the big point is to look at that learning game in the rule book as like a quick walkthrough for how are these turns going to work, and then play a fuller game, like four on a side. Divvy up the costs. This is going to be easier if you have a set, but divvy up the costs so that everybody kind of has like a 3, a 4, a 5, and a 6 or something like that, and just play with purchase cost and stats, and let that be that. And that will get people to understand how the game goes. The big thing I would recommend if you're brand new, and I'm sure you'll concur with this one, Evan, look very closely at the order of the attack step.
Yes. Possibly a few times.
Yeah. It's a huge part of the turn, and there were so many early questions that I think that I had too, that if I had looked a little more closely at the attack step and exactly what was described and when, it wouldn't have been a question.
And possibly even like give an extra bit of attention to the updates for how the attack step works, which I don't remember if they're in the UXM rules.
But most of them should be, yes.
Yeah. I don't know if they talk about the subway in there, but
I can't remember if the transit zone's in there either. But yeah, that is a big thing. You'll want to look up the idea of the transit area. We refer to it as the subway.
Yes, because I don't actually remember why I called it that. But
no, it makes sense. Transit, whatever. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is the idea that if a die is on its way to the used pile, that turn, it doesn't actually hit the used pile until your turn is over. Then it's in there. It's kind of in transit. It's on its way. It's in limbo.
It largely to prevent abuse of cycling dice.
Exactly. But I think if you do some of those, take some of those approaches, you're going to have no trouble. And I think if you're brand new and you're not sure about how some of these abilities interact and whatever else happens with these cards, playing it without abilities, I think one is still going to offer a pretty fun game. And two is going to give you the chance to kind of get everything else under your feet before we complicate it more. I mean, yeah. My background's in education, and the whole concept is scaffolding, right? So you want to start with that base foundation for how the heck does this work anyway, and then complicate it. Once you start there, it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, then you can play your next game with some abilities or all the abilities, and then you can work your way up to 8 characters, abilities, final destination.
Yes.
No items, final destination.
No, you got it. That's pretty much it. As far as that goes, I think that's the basic way to get it. The big thing I would say to teachers of the game is to watch complicating it too quickly. I know that seems obvious, but it's not always.
Don't try to say, oh man, here is my here is the nasty boy. And this is why I play this guy. No, just like give them some simple as pie Hulk beatdown.
Yeah, let it be straightforward. Get the mechanisms down, and if it's a game they like and they're going to take to, then they'll start to see some of the intricacies.
Right.
So yeah.
Or you could point them to various sites, like I don't know, the reserve pool, and they can read some strategy there.
Absolutely, plenty of strategy articles back in our archives there. You can find all of that. It's all on the sidebar. You can also sort by the labels that we have. We have tabs up on the top navigation bar for our site that lets you do that. A lot of those early strategy things hold as true today as they do when we wrote them. Things about when should you re-roll a die and when should you let it stay, and different things like that. These are just good strategies for Dice Masters in general at this point. And despite the fact that we have some new cards and new sets, there hasn't been a lot to rewrite with those. I mean, there's some best practices that you can do, and once you get deeper, check those out. But I get the impression there are a lot of new people.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, the curve in power has gotten a little kinder to getting what you need out.
Yeah.
So
that's true. Very true. Yeah, churn is totally different now, and that's something we might have to update. But we did an episode about that, too, probably about, oh boy, 5 or 6 episodes ago, something like
that. Yeah, a month or so.
Yeah,
month and a half.
So, yeah. Well, good talk. There will not be a podcast next week. Next Thursday, of course, is Christmas, and I will be spending that with my family. My family does celebrate the holiday and everything, and so lots of stuff, lots of busy things and running here and there, anything but relaxing, even though I'm off of work, so whatever. We do plan to have something up near New Year's, though with that holiday also being a Thursday, that'll likely be posted either earlier or later in the week. We're not 100% sure on the timing there. That's going to kind of depend on us and when we're able to get some stuff recorded and when we think that it's going to be most effective. But I don't know. New Year's Day for us was always a family thing. I don't know if that's true for everybody, but also you're kind of like recovering from New Year's Eve.
I'm actually having a big party on New Year's Day. So there's that.
Yeah. Excellent. That's fun. So that's episode 30.
Yep. We are done with 30 episodes.
We are, and we will have episode 31 coming at you pretty soon. But again, we will be off next week. So, thanks for listening. Once again, I'm Dave.
And I am the Evan.
And this is The Reserve Pool. We'll see you again soon.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. One, two, three.
Three.
That's how many licks it takes.
Yes. How many claps it takes to get to the center of a synchronization.
That's good. I like it.